But here's the idea. A businessman well known for cruelty, for ruthlessness, for immoral behavior was talking about his goals with Mark Twain. And he said, "One goal I want to accomplish before dying is to make a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. I'll climb Mount Sinai and I'll read the Ten Commandments aloud at the top." To which Mark Twain responded, "I have a better idea. You stay in Boston and keep them." Too many, both in the church and out, live by the motto, "Go big or go home." And listen, I'm not talking about the fact that it's used in sports. I'm not talking about the fact that it's used in business. What I'm talking about is the idea that we make grand, elaborate plans of the great things we're going to accomplish, and we ignore the smaller, everyday things that ultimately, if we do them, will allow us to accomplish the big things. That was the businessman's mindset for his spiritual life. He wanted to do one big thing before he died to make up for all of the other things that he had failed to do. He wasn't going to live the Ten Commandments on a daily basis, but he was going to make it to the top of Mount Sinai and read them once and take care of all the rest of it. He's going to make up spiritual ground. You know, sometimes it's easy to fall into that trap. "Oh, one day I'm going to go on a mission trip." What about our daily mission to seek and save the lost with everybody that we meet? "I'm going to conquer the world for Jesus." What about conquering my own attitude, conquering my own sins, conquering my own mouth, conquering whatever? Here's the thing. There are big things that need to be done in the kingdom. We need missionaries. We need Bible school teachers on a national level, on a university level. But is it not possible that while we're waiting for those opportunities, we're overlooking everyday things that need to be done too? Prayer, daily study, doing a golden deed like we've just sung. So here's our question. What does God ask of us? Are there times He may ask for the huge, the big, the grandiose? Absolutely. But look at Matthew chapter 25 and start at verse 14. Now let's go ahead and read the story together. "It's just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. He went on his journey. Immediately the one who had received the 5 talents went and traded with him and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received the 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more. His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful in a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' The one also who had received the 2 talents came up and said, 'Master, you entrusted to me 2 talents. See, I've gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' The one also who had received the 1 talent came up and said, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered no seed. I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours.' The master answered and said, 'You wicked, lazy slave, you knew that I reap where I did not sow, and I gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank. And on the arrival, I would have received my money back with interest. Take away the talent from him. Give it to the one who has the 10 talents. To everyone who has shall more be given, and he shall have an abundance. But the one who does not have even what he does have shall be taken away. And cast the worthless slave into the outer darkness, in the place that there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth.'" Here's what I want you to notice. We are good about looking at the parable. We're good at the idea of 5 and 2 and 1 and different talents and using those talents. But what I want you to notice is verse 21. Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Verse 23, again, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I'll put you in charge of many things. And then basically unsaid to the third servant was, I could not even trust you with the smallest of things. How can I trust you with anything bigger? You see, he needed to know whether or not they could take care of the smaller things in life before he could put them in charge of bigger and better things, or he could give them more responsibility, more tasks, bigger things to do. So I want you to look at some other verses with me and notice what God says about us taking care of the little things on a daily basis. Matthew 23 and verse 23, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness, but these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. Now, then he kind of says it in reverse, but the same point is, you got to take care of the little things and you got to take care of the big things. You got to do everything that I've entrusted to you. You're going to tithe the small things, you're going to tithe the big things. If you can do the smaller things, maybe you can get around to being able to do the bigger things. Luke chapter 9 and verse 23. You should know it. If I started, you can probably finish it. If anyone wants to come after me, he has to take up his cross daily and follow me. Notice Jesus said, I didn't say I need you to climb to the top of Mount Sinai. He didn't say, I need you to single-handedly take on the whole wide world and conquer it yourself. I don't need you to build an ark. I don't need you to write a book. I need you to come every day, pick up your cross, and walk with me. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1. Since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, back to chapter 11 and all of those people of faith, let us lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that's set before us. Okay. How do we run a race of endurance? Whether physically or spiritually, we run it one step at a time. We do the mundane, everyday process of putting one foot in front of the other. Ultimately, we get to the finish line. Now then, did he just list a cloud of witnesses that did great things? Sure. You flip back to chapter 11 and you've got Abraham. You got Isaac. You got Jacob. You got David. You got Samson. You go back to the Old Testament and you get Noah and Jephthah. And you get all these guys who did great, big, monumental things for God. And we act like that's the only characters in all the book. So that's all of the faithful in Judaism, in Israel? No. Every day, in the smallest ways possible, you had common everyday Jews getting out of bed and going about the process of being faithful children of God with the small things. Then, when they proved that they could do the small things, like a Moses, like an Abraham, like a Noah, God came and said, now I've got something really big for you. Proof of that is, well, the story of Noah. What does it say about Noah before he gets asked to build the ark? He's blameless, he's righteous, he walks with God. So he's already doing the day-in, day-out process of being a faithful child of God before God comes to him and said, hey, I need you to build an ark. And so the point is, God's not going to pick me out of the world, doing absolutely nothing for him, not proving myself faithful in anything, and give me the big project. Because he can't trust me with it. Because I hadn't been able to take care of the daily things, the smaller things. Matthew chapter 26. Jesus He's about to get ready to go into the Garden of Gethsemane. He's about to enter in that final phase of the plan where he does his praying and he accepts the cup that the Father has for him, and he ultimately goes to the cross. And he's talking to Peter and him, and he's talking about betrayal, and he's talking about the fact the disciples are going to leave him. And Peter says, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And all the disciples said the same thing. Basically, what Jesus said is, that's not what I ask you. Look back at verses 33 and 34. Peter answers them, even though all of them fall away from you, I never will fall away. But Jesus just says, truly I say to you, this very night before a cock crows, you shall deny me three times. Peter, I don't need you to die for me. I don't need you to take a bullet. I don't need you to do something monumental. He said, I need you to live for me. For the next few hours, I need you to stand beside me. For the next few hours, I need you to stay awake in the garden. You want to know part of the reason Peter fails outside the high priest? It's because he fell asleep in the garden. He couldn't even take care of staying awake for an hour and praying and staying focused on the task. Does God want to know if we'll die for him? If it comes to it, absolutely. But to know whether or not we're going to die for him, he first has to know whether or not we'll live for him. John chapter 21. Jesus has once again appeared to the disciples by the sea. He's caused that great catch. They've sat down and they've had breakfast. And then he turns to Peter again, Peter, and he says, look, I need to have a talk with you. Simon, son of John, verse 15, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he's probably thinking about, hey, I said I would die for you. Tend my lambs. Again, a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Shepherd my sheep. Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter grieved because he'd said it to him a third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Tend my sheep. Down to verse 19. Follow me. Down to verse 22. Follow me. Jesus said, I need you to decide right now that you're going to get up every morning, Peter. You're going to follow in my footsteps. That step by step, you're going to allow me to lead you. You're going to do the things that I call you to do every day. So I want to make four observations very quickly. Number one, not everyone is capable of the grandiose. Not everybody is capable of doing huge, monumental, once-in-a-lifetime things for the kingdom. I've already pointed out, the ones that are listed in Hebrews 11 and the ones that jump off the page at us as we read through the Old Testament, they're the few and the far between. There's a whole lot of other people going about their daily business that we never read about. Not everyone's capable of the big. But number two, everyone can do the daily things, the everyday things, the things that sometimes we think of as being mundane. Everybody can pray. Everybody can study. Everybody can be nice. Do good. Love. Share the message with those that we meet on a daily. I don't have to go across the world to evangelize. If I'm capable and that's my calling, fantastic. But if I'm not, I'm still capable of telling my next door neighbor. Number three, we have to prove ourselves faithful in the smaller things before he can entrust the bigger things to us. You want to know why God maybe has never called you to scale the mountain for him? Maybe it's because he's watching your everyday life and figured out that you're not even taking care of the smaller things. But you can't get up and pray. But you can't get up and study. You can't make it to worship when you're supposed to. so on and so forth. Number four is a little bit different. Maybe we find ourselves faced with the monumental. Maybe we've kind of accomplished the daily task and he comes to us like he does Noah and says, hey, I need you to build an ark. I want us to understand if God asks for the big, he knows we're capable. He doesn't ask us for the things we cannot do. And the other thing I want you to understand is even the biggest task God gives you is made up of a bunch of little things just put together. You see, before Noah could build an ark, he had to do what? He had to cut some trees. He had to round up some nails. He had to make some boards. He had to gather some food. He had to do the little stuff before he could do the big one. One step at a time. Each little step we take, no matter how small it seems to us, brings us closer to the goal. Brings us closer to the finish line in Hebrews chapter 12. We have to walk before we can run. So we have to do the little stuff before we can do the big stuff. We have to dribble before we can lead the fast break. You have to catch before you can score the touchdown. If we understand that in life, how about understanding it in our spiritual lives? Here's the challenge. Do the little things every day that make up being faithful children of God. Keep the fruit of the Spirit. Bear fruit in the kingdom. Be loving and forgiving. When you do those and you do them well, there is no telling what you will accomplish. But I can guarantee you this. If you sit around from now to Judgment Day waiting on one big thing to do and never do the little things, you will never accomplish anything in the kingdom. The invitation tonight is to the little things, to the daily carrying of your cross, to a dedicated prayer life, to a dedicated study life, to being a good father and a good mother, a good husband, being a good child, being what you are, where you are, to the very best of your ability on a daily basis. And then you look back and realize in the end you did accomplish great things all the way through your life as we stand and sing.